legendary Humble and Fred Show, Canada's national morning show.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
The following episode of Humble and Fred Radio is brought to you by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Palma Pasta, CDN Technologies, and our newest sponsor, Sticker U, where you can get your stickers on Queen Street or order anywhere in the world. If you'd like to talk to Humble and Fred, call 1-833-437-8465. That's 1-833-HF-STINK. And now from the worldwide headquarters of the Humble and Fred Show, here are Fred and Dan.
That's right. Thank you, Phil. What is it? Tuesday, January 14th. Howard's not here today. He's having another medical procedure. He's having a nerve in his back burnt or something for the fourth time in the past few months. He was always complaining about his back, and apparently this is helping. So he had a chance to be in there at 7 o'clock this morning and took advantage of that. So it's me and Dan Duran. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. It's nice to be here. I spent the evening in the complex, and then here I am, first thing.
That's pretty good. You know what? Guests of the Humble and Fred Show get to stay at Howard's place. No, it's fantastic.
The Humble Howard Comfort Inn.
Guest hosting.
Everybody is given that option. Howard's not going to be here. Fred's not going to be here. Can you sit in on the show tomorrow? Hey, you can stay here, and it's great. Does he change the sheets?
I don't
Seriously,
know.
When you got on that bed, did it smell like fresh sheets?
No, but I stayed here last week. I don't know.
Oh, I see.
I don't know. I just assume.
So it was your stink
from the previous time, yeah. Which was only last week.
No, but that is a great option to have because you can't come in from Peterborough.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to do that at this time of the morning. So he gets to stay at the Humble and Fred Hotel.
The
Fantastic.
Limited economy segment. Yes.
All right, on today's show, after 8 o'clock, her name is Emily O'Brien. She has a fascinating story. She is a failed drug smuggler. And she was caught at Pearson Airport with drugs strapped to her body and went to jail. Anyway, it's a great story about how she got sucked into it and how she's turned her life around and for the better. And now she started a business. Anyway, she'll be here after 8 o'clock to tell that story. Other stuff in the news today, there's more information about what happened in Iran. Some arrests have been made, the royal family, all that crap. But in the meantime, I want to just welcome Dan onto the show in this capacity.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here. We didn't really talk about you're doing the commercial stuff, right?
Yes.
The meeting, because you guys never have meetings before the show. It's always during the show.
No, we don't.
Yeah.
No,
so am I supposed to, we're going to the commercial break. Am I supposed to say that stuff? Like the Humble and Fred Show will be back right after this?
No, you let me handle that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
No, I wanted to welcome you to the show because you've sat in on the show a few times, but really not in this co-host capacity, have you?
No, I've never done that. No.
No, and this is great.
I think the only time I've ever sort of co-hosted the Humble and Fred Show one other time back when we were working at CFNY in the day, before I left CFNY, that
right.
Howard didn't make it in, and I, for whatever reason, and then I was in the seat. I don't know if you remember that. I don't remember the show much.
No.
I just remember doing that. Don't remember anything about it.
And again, you're no stranger to this. In recent history, you were the morning man at Magic, 97.6?
Magic 96.7, yeah.
In Peterborough, and did a fine job.
Thank you. So, working with Linda Cash as my co-host there. And she's, if anybody doesn't, we've talked about this before, but her most noted thing
right.
is that she is, or was the Philadelphia cream cheese angel that
right.
floated in the clouds, if you remember those commercials.
Yeah, because at the time I was the program director at The Wolf, right? And you were the morning man at Magic around.
Yeah.
We overlapped.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were working at the competing radio stations.
Right.
For a bit.
And you did such a fine job. You're no longer there. Hey, me too. Me too. I did such a fine job. I'm no longer there. For me, it was probably the best thing that could have ever happened to me. I can't speak for you, but getting out of Peterborough was good. But
well, it was. It was, as I've said before, about any time I've been let go, and this one was. the station was purchased unexpectedly by another company, just slightly bigger than this, the three station company that I was working for. And I, by the way, I love smaller companies to work for in general, as opposed to the big behemoths. If it's all my preference, I'd prefer the smaller company. And they took over this little bit larger company took over, and then they said hello everybody to the first on the first day. Day one of the month, I think it was July or July 1 or something. And July 2nd, then they pulled me into the office, and everybody that was on the air on that radio station was pulled off the air and let go. And then they just let, there was no announcers for over a year, and now they have one announcer that does a 2 hours in the morning show by voice track. So it's not live.
And that's great because, you know, those small markets, the whole idea of having radio is to be sort of community radio and serve the community with information.
With information, yes.
And that's just a great way to do it. Play a bunch of oldies and have the disc jockey on tape. I love that. It's great. I mean, they're fulfilling their mandate.
I know. I totally agree with you there.
It's brilliant. No, but you have a long and storied career. You really do. I mean, you started as the as the producer of the Humble and Fred Show in this market in 1989, and then you were at CFTO on the Deanie Petty Show, and then you did another show called, what, E Now?
E Now, which is a precursor to what's out there now is E Talk. So
which you could still be on. You could do a better job than Ben Mulrooney. You could.
Thank you.
And you're better looking. You are. And you're better looking.
You.
And you have a better voice. What are they thinking? What's he doing
He's now? Gotten slightly better over the years, though.
Yeah, but Dan, you were brilliant. As a matter of fact, I thought we might revisit the E! Now days later on in the show because the Oscar nominations were announced yesterday.
Announced yesterday, yeah.
And maybe we can do a little E! Now thing where you can talk about the Oscar nominations.
Okay. That sounds like a fun thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also, you're a very handy man.
I've done a few things around my house and moved on from there. I've done a little bit of construction in my day.
Yes,
I always found
have.
It fascinating.
And Dan's the type of guy, again, we've told people many times over the years that you're my neighbor at the Tin Palace.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan's the type of guy, no matter what you're doing, he will drop his tools and walk over and start helping you. And a guy like me, that, well, that's fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah.
Because as you've noticed, Dan, I can't do it. No, I can't.
You know what it is, though? It's more fun to help other people in some ways than to do the stuff that you've got right in front of you that's just, you know, just sitting at and you... Because it's you against your house or whatever you're working on, right?
Is that a conscious thing?
What? No,
like, you think... You're over there, say, cleaning... Like Dan's very thorough... Like, he'll have a deck, and he'll be cleaning in between the slats of his deck with a toothbrush. True story.
True, yes.
True story.
But there's a reason. But so it does so the cracks don't build up too much moisture and then rot the deck out.
Yeah. Well, it's funny.
Yeah.
I've never done that. My deck's not rotten. It's true. No. Is that a conscious thought? You think, I've got this work to do, but look at Fred struggling with whatever. It will be fun to go and help him, or do you just subconsciously do
I think
that?
It's a little bit of both of that, because there's not as much of my skin in the game helping you. I mean, I know how to get through stuff. I'm very, very picky toothbrush, as an example. So I'm always battling, am I doing too much? Am I caring about this a little bit too much? I'm working on my attic right now, and I'm like, nobody's ever going to see up there. And I'm going, am I doing too much? I'm vacuuming and just thinking. You
know. Well, that's one great thing about having you on the show on a daily basis now with the weather is, you know, we get to follow those stories. No, seriously, we've talked about your attic, we've talked about your roof, and it's great. And I think the average guy likes to hear that stuff for two reasons. They might learn something, or... They sit there going, I'm glad that's not me. Because that's me.
which is a large part of a lot of people, yeah.
Because when you tell me a story that at 10 o'clock last night I was on my roof putting shingles on.
Because the rain's coming.
With the aid of a light. Honestly, I'm thinking, I'm glad that's not me.
Yeah.
And I think that's a natural reaction. But it is, it's...
I got to say the light, though, the minor light idea, that's a genius idea. Have you ever, Ed,
where you put it on your head?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a genius. I mean, I know the miners had it figured out somewhere with candles or something way, way back, but yeah, no. So I've only started using it in the last year.
Here's a story about those. Delise bought me a 3-pack of those head flashlights.
Yeah, with
flash
the LED
lights.
In it. Yeah,
yeah.
Super bright.
That you strap around your head.
Yeah.
Here's how handy I am. I still haven't opened it.
No, I haven't.
It's no, really, it's still in the shed.
How long ago did you buy it?
Probably 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh, okay. Because the technology's improved a lot, because I've gone through a few of them.
No, I know, but that's the thing. You're doing Dan Duran stuff all the time that would call for a miner's light. And what am I never find in my position where, oh, yeah, I'll use that miner's light. I just, because you know what? If I needed a miner's light, I'd just call Dan to help me.
I'd call Dan. Will be right over.
No, and so many times I've been in that situation where it's like I envy, because Dan can look at a problem and come up with a solution quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I look at a problem and if I start to fix it, it's usually from the wrong end or the wrong angle or the wrong approach. And I don't know, is that a genetic thing? I don't know, because my dad wasn't very handy either.
You know what? It's a patience thing. And some of the weirdest... And people have... well, our friend Jeff Lumby, mm-hmm. which has always surprised myself and Howard, has very little patience for many things. And so one of the things that we all found fascinating was that he got into... And I'm not this patient. Doing craftsman stuff as far as making cabinetry and that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
which takes... You can't be off by, you know, an eighth of an inch. And
right.
and put the thing together. You have to be. It has to be very exact. So he has the patience for that, for the most part, to do that. I don't. I can't. I mean, so everybody has a different patience.
Well, it's degrees of patience, because I notice when you do a job, and I've said this to Delise many times, when Dan starts a job, he starts a job to do it right. When I start a job, I do it to get it over with. No, but it's true. I'm being completely honest. It's like I start a job, and it's like, how quickly can I declare that this is over?
Right.
So along the way, you may skip steps or do certain things. Like I've noticed, like I've seen you put a barbecue back together, right?
Yeah.
And then paint every piece as you're putting it back together. That's never going to happen in my world. No, it's just not.
Well, that's just one, because I know I've been through the cycle enough to know, okay, if I don't do this now, because my inclination is to recycle a lot of things. I like taking stuff off the street and fixing it up and using it.
Did you hear that? He likes taking stuff off the street.
Oh.
Yeah. What is some of the stuff you've taken off the street? I mean, it's fascinating.
Well, it's more fun in Toronto, because more stuff hits the curb than say, in the Peterborough area. I don't know. I picked up a Bosch dishwasher once. In
functional.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It worked. Yeah, it worked fine. It was a couple of minor things, like the drain at the bottom had been plugged up, so they probably curbed it because they thought it wasn't working because they hadn't cleaned the bottom of it. And
that's right, and they probably phoned a repairman and found out it would be $400 to fix, and
so
I can buy a new one for $600. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you scoop in. You Dan Duran it.
And it's working. Put it in my house, yeah.
No, that's fantastic. I know another time Dan was all excited because on the side of the road he found some old film.
Oh, I love this, yes.
Like in the tin.
Like in the canister?
In the canisters.
Oh.
Those little Super 8 movies that people used to take for their families.
Wow. That's right. So one night at his place. Mm-hmm. In fact, on more than one occasion, I think a couple of New Year's Eves ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2 years ago up at the lake, I brought him up, yeah. And a couple of years, I like to bring him out. Some family I've never met lived in the Bloor West area.
It's brilliant.
Toronto.
Because you don't realize, with a glass of scotch, watching family films of a family you've never
from
met.
From 50 years ago.
Random. But all we notice is there's a lot of booze on the table.
Yeah.
And everybody.
Kitchen parties.
And everybody's got a smoke in their hand.
Oh, that was right. Yeah. Everybody has smoke.
It's like Mad Men or
different
something.
Different time. It totally from the Mad Men time. It's like 1957 to 63, those movies are from.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, it's bizarre watching those things.
Yeah. It's remarkable how you can get drawn into that because, well, like, you know, we've talked about that on the show recently, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and a few other series, as Howard said, timepieces, where you sort of put yourself in that time, and it's fun to just
go back to a quote unquote simpler time, which is,
and that's what those films did, because it reminded me of when, you know, I remember our, my family in the early 60s, maybe late 50s, and that's what it was like. And it's, and they were what, black and white and all.
Well, there was some old, you know, that faded color look,
right?
That that color that they have out.
And scratchy and herky jerky and everything, but but anyway, that was one of the many things that he has found on the side of the road. All right, Dan Durant, thanks for being here today.
Well, thank you. Hey, it's time for the weather.
Yes, it is. It's time for the weather. 7:50, and apparently that's what time we do the weather.
You don't pay attention to
this.
So
here we go.
Dan Durant, weather, weather, Dan Durant. Dan Durant, weather, weather, Dan Durant. Dan Durant, weather, weather, Dan Durant.
Dan
Durant, weather, weather, Dan Durant.
Dan Durant.
Nice one.
Yeah. Every day's a little different, I know. It's nice.
Now, do you sing from Peterborough?
No, I don't, because there's a delay when I'm I'm in on the line, right?
All right.
So, so I come in and, a second later off
right.
the beat.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Because there's another thing, eh? Dan's a great singer.
Mm-hmm.
On top of everything else.
I just should do more of the singing. I sang when I was in high school.
Yeah.
In choirs and stuff.
All right,
what's
going on with the environment?
Well, it's very cold out west. We talked about that yesterday. And like in Calgary, it's like somewhere between minus 31 and minus 28 degrees. That's the high today, depending where you are in Calgary. And it kind of, it's just locked in on a cold temperature. That cold air is heading our way, but not quite to the extreme that they have it here. But it'll be arriving on Thursday night into Friday. So our temperatures are going to be a little bit above normal for the next few days. We could get some, for today, there's a 30-40% chance of some snow and some freezing drizzle and a little bit of fog in the GTA area. But heading toward a high of 3 today and then again tomorrow. And then overnight on Thursday, after a 1-degree high, it'll get down to minus 12 here. A little bit colder further north, like in Peterborough, in that area there. The high on Friday will be minus 8 for Toronto. And then in Peterborough, it's going to be like minus 19. So there's sort of a dividing line a little bit further north. So all these areas like Barrie, further north than that, it's all going to be in that area, that kind of super cold area. And then after that, it's going to be seasonal is minus 2 this time of year. So after that, into next week, it's going to be a little bit below, like Monday, minus 8 again, and a little bit chillier mid next week. So there you go. And some snow is probably coming our way, 10 to 20 centimeters of snow on Saturday.
Well, we're due for some cold weather. There's no doubt about that. We've been pretty lucky so far.
It feels weird. I mean, Calgary's temperature of minus 31 just remind. I mean, I grew up in Alberta, and it reminds me of some super cold winters out that way. But
yeah,
it's been a while since they've had. I think 2004 is the last time they had temperatures like this in January.
Now, it's in the evening. It doesn't offend you if I tell you I watch Tom Brown.
There's a lot of different weather presentation styles.
Uh-huh.
He's got one too.
Yes. Yes. Very, very frenetic. You notice that?
Yeah.
Like almost over the top.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's my newscast of choice, and he comes with it.
Uh-huh.
But what he was showing that Western weather map yesterday, and even Vancouver, like near Vancouver, like on that side of the mountains, it's pretty cold.
Yeah.
So that's weird, too, isn't it?
It's a little bit of a weather anomaly. Well, it's more and more of this. You can expect with global warming that there's going to be more severe weather events. Difficult to point to any specific event, though. You kind of can point to the Australian experience as being a little bit more directly related to climate change.
You know, I've been looking at the weather at Playa del Carmen quite a bit lately.
Oh, because you're going to Playa del Carmen in what? How many days?
11 or something.
Oh, you just throw that out
how
there.
How many? I forget.
Oh, something.
31st. But here's, I was thinking, when I'm looking at the weather, I said, you could never be a weatherman in Playa del Carmen.
Why?
Well, you look at the weather map, and every day is 29 and sunny.
So those guys would just sit in front of their green screen and say the same thing.
Seriously. I mean, their dry season is from, like, November to April.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is your job? Because it's 29 and sunny every day, and the low is, like, 21, 22 degrees.
Isn't
like, it would be the most
of rain?
Nah. Well, the odd time, but again,
I don't watch Playa del Carmen weather at all.
But see, I guess the purpose of a weatherman is to tell you, especially in an area like this, the extremes. You really never know.
Yeah, you want it. Yeah,
you never know what you're going to get.
It's way more fun as a weather guy to talk about the extremes.
This is my point.
Yeah, every day you'd have to make something up about. Yeah. You know, hey, I'm in.
You'd have to be like a comedian or something.
Yeah. Remote from all the various jungle sites down in the Playa del Carmen.
But even if you're a weatherman in Florida, still, you know, sometimes with tornadoes and hurricanes
and
stuff
like that.
Oh, yeah,
that's a big thing that people want it.
Yeah, but I just, again, and what I've done is I've gone in and I've looked at the history of February in Playa del Carmen.
Wow.
And January. Well, you know, you fall into those rabbit holes.
I guess.
And, like, it's amazing. Year after year after year, the weather during that time of year just is the same.
Was that one of the main reasons you decided you chose Playa del Carmen as the weather?
One of them.
Yeah?
One of them.
What are the other ones?
Because last year we went to San Miguel de Allende, but the thing is it's in the mountains.
Yeah.
And it's lovely during the day, but the evenings and mornings are really cold.
Oh, that makes sense.
And I like a warm morning so I can go out and walk and stuff like that. And I'm talking cold, 3 or 4 Celsius.
Oh, no, I know. It gets in those setting of deserty kind of high altitude areas. Yeah, for sure.
So you mentioned global warming, climate change. Where are we at right now? Climate change or global warming or both? I forget.
I think both of those are fine.
No, you and I.
I mean, yeah. There's climate change for the deniers. I think that's what they changed it to. Climate change because global warming was fooling everybody. The temperature of the planet is going up, but the point is not everywhere is going to get warmer. And so anytime it got colder, then people were saying, well, you know, what about this climate change? What a pile of crap. So
And that's not me.
No.
You and I often debate the subject.
We do debate the subject.
But we bait. I'm not a denier. I totally agree that it's a problem where you and I sometimes knock heads is what do we do about it?
Right.
And Howard and I were discussing this yesterday. I don't know if you heard that.
I wasn't here for that. I would have been awesome to talk about.
Well, you heard that discussion. Well, you didn't hear that discussion. Was basically what do we do about it? It sounded hopeless, and I said, I used the word futile. I don't know if that's the situation, but what do we do about it? What do we do about it, Dan? Doesn't it all start with us, each individual? Isn't that where we've got to get off the mark?
And you know what? There's a range of human dynamic that there's going to be people on all ends of the spectrum. There needs to be guidance from governments around the world that believe in climate change, in my opinion. And I think we're at a different level of how much influence the government should have on influencing that behavior. Mm-hmm. But we have these recycling programs and we're, you know, constantly being pushed to recycle. For example, not everything's perfect about any of that. And a lot of people have somehow gotten the impression a lot of the recycling just goes straight into the garbage. So why should I do this? And there's all this kind of justification. And you're not going to win every single time but you're trying to move the meter, trying to move the whole society, right?
Right.
We just have to move it faster than we are doing it right now.
And,
so,
and that's where I get into hopeless. How do you do that? Because everybody's a big advocate until it inconveniences them. And
you know,
that's how you have to.
I think what's happening in Australia is starting to, there's these big events that are starting to awaken us up a little bit. And I don't know if Australia will. That's just where my hope is, that these devastating fires in Australia and in the Amazon, that people are going to start saying, well, wait a minute, we are, you know, this is a pretty huge scale, how bad things can get. It's not just, you know, everything's going to get warmer and whatever else. I mean, think about those fires in Australia, about, you know, all, it's like this massive campfire that all these carbon emissions are going into the environment and escalating we got to go. Music, that means we got to go.
No. Yeah. I mean, you can make your point, and I totally understand it. It's going to take something catastrophic. But to me, catastrophic will be, again, more self-interest. When people start losing the beaches of Florida, then they'll wake up. A few fires in Australia might wake them up.
Too far away.
And, you know, cause us to feel bad. But all of a sudden, when you have nowhere to go because there's no beaches, well, then maybe that will wake everyone up.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dan Duran. Well, no, I mean,
I still have hope, and there's many things I can say about it, and the Australian fires and all the rest of that. But we do have to pay attention, I think.
Okay, it's the Humble and Fred Show. Humble's not here today. Dan Durant's sitting in. You're listening to Canada's comedy superstation, Funny 820. Stop your fooling around. Of course, you can also watch the Humble and Fred Show on Twitch TV, Facebook Live, and of course, humbleandfredradio.com. Download the podcast at all the, and I mean all, the, what do you call them now, regular places? I guess they're all regular, aren't they?
All the regular podcatchers.
Yeah. There's a ton of them, and we're everywhere. We're everywhere.
I'm Dan, Dan Duran, by the way. I'm guest howarding this morning.
Yes.
Just so you're coming back and
people
not wondering who the hell this guy is.
No, I know.
Yeah.
Howard's not here. He's having another procedure on his back. The poor man. Really, the poor man.
Poor Howard.
Shoulder, back, knees.
We can talk about this tomorrow, I guess. It'll be a big feature of him hunting for the painful spot and frying the nerve and all that tomorrow.
Right.
That's coming up tomorrow.
He has.
Listen tomorrow.
I know. He has explained the procedure.
Yeah.
And it's extremely uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
My only concern would be the frequency of having your body invaded like that and something burned. But anyway. That's what's happening. But anyway,
branding iron for the nerve ending.
As long as it keeps that handicap around one, that's all that matters.
Wouldn't want to give up the golf. Keeps him alive.
No. In a minute, we're just going to go through the Oscar nominations because I want to take advantage of having Dan Duran here. And, you know, he was he had that big show, E-Now, for so many years on CTV. So if you're going to have an entertainment personality in-house, you might as well use him, right?
Uh-huh.
Right, Phil?
Yes.
But in the meantime, tell us a little bit about Gig Sky.
Absolutely. And,
there we go. Did you lose your Gig Sky?
Oh, no, I'm just doing the technical stuff, and I didn't realize there wasn't any music. So, Gig Sky. You know, the recent weather has probably got everyone thinking about their winter travel plans. Certainly mine as well. I'm going to a warmer place next month. But don't forget to get your Gig Sky service before you travel so you can stay connected. And don't forget, the Gig Sky eSIM, which is software. It's not the actual card. Some people mistaken plastic for that. But the eSIM is available for the new Google Pixel 4 devices, as well as the Pixel 3 and 3. So it's as simple as downloading the Gig Sky app, the latest one, and then subscribing to the same regional and world plans available on the iPhones and other Android phones that have the eSIM. And if you don't have eSIM service, you might have an older phone, for example, like me. And so just get the physical SIM on the Humble and Fred Radio.com website, and there's more specials on the way. And if you want, you can also get the physical hotspot, which you can share with others.
Okay, Humble and Fred listeners can now experience a California dream of their own this Canadian winter and stay at a lovely place in the Santa Rosa Mountains, okay? Go to humbleandfredradio.com, click on Turnkey Vacation, look at the beautiful home that is available for rent by Humble and Fred listeners at a discount. Okay, the promo code is OWNER15. And you could take advantage of this beautiful home down, you know, in the Palm Springs area. Fantastic. Howard is going for a test run in a few weeks. And I'm sure he'll report back and tell us how fabulous it is. Turnkey Vacations on the Humble and Fred Radio website. Click on that. And the promo code is OWNER15. All right. And again, coming up after 8 o'clock, Emily O'Brien. She was a drug mule and got caught at Pearson. She's got a fascinating story. She went through that and then turned her life around. It really is something to hear, and we're going to hear about it after 8 o'clock.
And we're all curious about how she hid the drugs, where she hid the drugs.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
In her underwear, actually.
Really? You've read this?
Yeah.
You know this?
Yeah.
Oh.
In her underwear. Like in her underwear.
Like
in the underwear.
In the underwear.
And not in the... Well...
Yeah. She only did this once?
Just in the underwear. She did it just once and...
got caught.
Yeah, and that's the part of the story that fascinates me, is being in the plane and it's landing at Pearson. You know you're just moments away from security. And apparently that's where she blew it. But I don't want to give too much away. I'm so much of a suck, I could never, ever, ever dream of doing something like that.
But. Well, you know what? I've been thinking about this, that we all have a line that we won't cross, right? Mm-hmm. No, you know, we could do some bad stuff, but we'll only go so far.
Yeah.
And then that would be too much, right? And I think being a drug mule would be like, for most people, that's way beyond, that's crossing a line that, you know, that's a no-brainer. Never going to do that.
No, I know.
So how did, and I'm sure that was with her, how did that line move? How did she?
That's part of the story, too. Sometimes you're talked into it by someone.
Yes.
And
made it seem reasonable.
Well, and they've done it to more than one person.
Yeah.
So it's a finely tuned process of brainwashing or convincing an innocent person to do this.
Right.
And it's one of those situations where you think, I could never do that, and then you turn around one day and you did it. A young, impressionable woman. But again, she'll tell the story. I can't imagine being her father having your kid go through that. But anyway, yesterday they announced the Oscar nominations.
Yes.
And what is it about the Oscar nominations? Because I'm like you and a lot of guys, people.
Yeah.
I may not have seen many of them. And I don't follow producers, directors. Like, Howard's the type of guy. Maybe you are, too. When you go to see a film, you know, the director and the producer and the history of how they decided to make this film and all that crap. I'm just not there. However.
You enjoy a good movie, though.
Well, I enjoy a good movie. But often I'll see a good movie and I can't even tell you who starred in it unless it's somebody, like, super...
Really? You don't have any...
No. Like, I watched that movie on Netflix. The Marriage. I didn't know. Scarlett Johansson, I didn't. Yeah, I had heard of her, but I didn't know that was her.
Right.
And the guy I'd never seen before, and now he's been nominated for a Best Actor Award. You know what I mean? But then, on the flip side of that, The Irishman, I know who De Niro is and
Pacino
and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead.
No, it's interesting, all these movies that got nominated, like for the Best Picture. And I was just going through this yesterday when it was announced, because this is always fascinating to me. And often I go to parties, you know, the Oscar parties, and you kind of, you know, you take your guesses, just like the Super Bowl pool of who's going to be mm-hmm. winning what.
You've been to Oscar parties?
Yeah.
Wow.
You've never been to an Oscar party?
No.
Really?
Why would I go to an Oscar? It's a Tuesday night. Oh, seriously.
It's a big event. Well, not as much as it used to be in my mind. I don't care as much as I used to.
Right.
But
well, and that's the one point. Just before you continue, I was going to say that. I'm not that into movies per se, but whenever the Oscars are announced, like yesterday, I said, Oscar announcements, I want to see what they are.
Yeah.
Even though I can't really relate to them, it's a thing.
Yeah.
Not enough for me to go to an Oscar party. But
it's a great way to watch the Oscars, because then you don't have to spend 100% of your attention on the actual, you know, you wait for the actual announcement. But there's a lot of, you know, baggage that goes along with the, you know, the commercials and the, and the, you know, the you know, leading up to it.
Do they have Oscar commercials like they have Super Bowl commercials, like specially made for the Oscars?
I think there's a few of them.
Wow.
I don't know. It's not like the Super Bowl is singularly different than any other kind of event like that. Though there's some interesting commercials that come out. That, but that's not the end.
Okay,
the
best
focus.
Best.
Okay, so Best Picture, Ford. I looked at this whole list. I haven't seen one of these. Ford versus Ferrari, which is that, you know,
Howard saw it, loved it.
Yeah, and I've heard different things about that movie. The Irishman,
saw it.
Long movie,
loved it.
Scorsese,
it Netflix movie though, but same thing. I watched an hour and a half one night, an hour and a half the next night.
Is that a good way to go?
Well. We're so into binging now, so why not? You know?
You know, you're right about that. Yeah. I haven't watched it because I didn't feel like I had the time.
That's what I watched.
But then again, I've watched many series, you know, and 20-minute bites, put them all together.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, I just completed Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Uh-huh. It was my third run at it. And I just made myself sit in front of the TV until I got to know the characters. Mm-hmm. And then I loved it. And I'll tell you, I watched three seasons in maybe 8 days.
Oh, really? Oh, wow, yeah. You went down. You went down the rabbit hole.
Well, we've had some lousy weather. No, but it's true.
You're hoping for lousy weather.
That whole rainy weekend was perfect for binging. Mm-hmm. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay, so Jojo Rabbit.
Mm-hmm. Howard loved it.
And I think Scarlett Johansson got nominated for that as well. Ooh. Or she's in it anyway. Right?
Oh, is she? I know she was in The Marriage.
I'll look for later. And then The Joker. I hear it's very dark. Be interesting to see.
I would love to see that.
Little Women. Don't have a desire to see that personally, but...
isn't that... who's in that?
Margaret Atwood is in that.
Is she really?
I believe so, yes.
And who's the big star in that? What's her... Laura Dern, isn't it? Or something?
Emma Watson,
okay.
Yes, Hermione.
I'm wrong.
There's a few people in that, I think.
Yeah.
And then there's... sorry, I just lost my my list here. So there's Marriage Story. Keep hearing a lot about
that. Here's the thing about the Marriage Story. I think if you've been through that, it has more impact. To me, it was sort of like Kramer versus Kramer, the story, you know, people getting a divorce and fighting over the kids. Like,
right.
We know the story. We've been up that road before.
We know how
it
ends.
But a lot of people loved it. I mean, I watched it. I watched it beginning to end, and it was good, but I'm surprised it gets that recognition. But go ahead.
Right. Then there's 1917. That war movie about the First World War, getting lots and lots of buzz right now.
You know, guys my age can relate to that movie because my grandfather, Fred Perrin, who I was named after, he was in that war at 17. Actually, at 18. He was born in 1899.
Oh, he was in the trenches?
He was in the trenches. He was gassed. Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, horrible
That's
story.
Such a horrible war.
But I mean, all
wars are great, except for that one.
No,
that was a really, as far as wars go, that one was horrible.
But I see the trailers for that now, and I think, you know, I want to go and see that. And I think guys my age, our age, can relate to that because I'm thinking, geez, my grandfather went through that. Look at the life I've lived. Big suck. You know what I mean?
Right.
Comparatively, I'd love to go and see that movie because apparently it really captures the feel. Just to see what those guys went through. And it's done in a certain way where it's one continuous shot.
Oh, it seems
or something.
Like there's a lot. Yeah, I don't know. Is the whole movie done that way? Or
something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw a documentary about the making of the movie. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the movie. But it is fascinating, though. It feels very real from their perspective because it's a couple of guys that they're tasked with they have to go past enemy lines or something and their whole. Mm-hmm. And they took a field somewhere and created the battlefield.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing how they put it all together.
It's one of those things. I have this service where I'm lucky to get films before I had before everyone.
Oh, right.
A lot of other people.
An unusual service.
But it's
appreciate your patronage, by the way, on the
yeah. Hey, listen, the radio business is struggling. What, I'm going to worry about the movie industry?
That's not my industry.
Seriously. No, but it's one of those movies I'd rather see at the theater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I think that would, absolutely. Yeah. And there's a lot of movies that you know, should be really seen on the big screen to give you the, you know, or at least a larger screen at home, not the little phone.
Right.
I can't get over my kid watching things on his phone all the time.
Isn't that an interesting point? Because when I was a kid watching television, everybody had like a 19-inch.
Right.
Or even smaller when I was really young. And then 25-inch TV was a huge thing in the 60s.
Yeah.
You've got a 25-inch color television? Are you kidding me? And the thing is, everybody was so enamored with the size. And then big screens started to happen.
Right.
Remember, 35 inches was a big screen. And then 45 inches. We used to go to bars in Toronto to see the big the hockey game on
the big screen.
And it was only about 50 inches, right?
Yeah, it was the biggest they could come up with. It was, you know, something the bar could afford to put on the wall. You know?
And as soon as I could get a big screen in my house, I couldn't wait. And now I have a 65-inch television, which is a big deal to me. I really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Isn't it funny? Kids now are going the other way. That does not impress them at all.
Miniaturization of everything,
What they watch on their phones.
Yeah.
And are completely satisfied doing it.
I have a beautiful theater experience upstairs. I've got the 60-inch screen. I've got really, really expensive speakers for the sound system. They're just a beautiful kind of experience. You can sit down and watch the TV. Now, he likes to play games on that system. Metallica with all his buddies.
Right.
You know, they're playing multiple players on the same split screen, whatever. But he's never, he never watches a movie on that thing. Never. Mm-hmm. And he's, and I know he's secretly watching movies and YouTube videos somewhere, and it's got to be on his little device. And I can't believe that. I mean, you get pretty good audio, I guess, but.
Right.
Like the little tiny screen, you're not catching the detail of, you know, a 1917, you know, walking through a through a war zone. Right?
No, I get it. They don't seem to have much interest in big screen TVs the way their daddies did. Mm-hmm. But
it's good enough, I think. It's just good enough.
Well, I would say too, it can follow you around. That's the thing too. It's your phone, so like you can walk around with it. It's like a TV that's always with you.
Right.
So it may be smaller, but it's always with you.
And, and imagine what you can watch under the covers at night.
Yeah, I don't want to think about that.
You don't want to
Ford
think about
versus
that.
Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah. You would have. That's what I did. Well, it was, well, think about it, it was ridiculous. No. When I was a kid, my mom comes into the room, and I've got a 25-inch color under my sheet.
Wow, that's a big screen.
Freddie, what are you doing? Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. Okay, there's two more movies.
Yeah.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Quentin Tarantino movie.
Saw it.
And?
Liked it.
Yeah.
Not as much as other people. But the problem is sometimes with movies, you've got to... I really wanted to see that movie. I should have seen it right away. By the time I saw it, a lot of people had sliced and diced it and analyzed it. So I think that took something away for me.
Right.
It wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be.
Right. And I've heard that it's not the best Quentin Tarantino movie.
No, not...
And that he's, like, retiring maybe after
this
one.
But it's subjective, too. It's like, you know, to one person, it's the greatest, and another person, it's meh. So... great performances by those guys, and they were both nominated, but we'll get to that. And what's the other movie?
Parasite.
Okay. Isn't that an Asian movie?
I believe so, yeah. So we're rich against poor, kind of somebody goes into their house and is a teacher, and then it goes from there, teaching a kid.
And okay, and just actors and actresses.
Actors and actresses?
Yeah.
Okay, so like these, you know, these movies were going to be... All the leading men and women are going to be in these movies we just mentioned for the most part. Like leading an actor in a leading role, Antonio Banderas in Pain and Glory, that wasn't mentioned.
Don't know.
Leonardo DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Adam Driver in Marriage Story.
Mm-hmm.
Joaquin Phoenix in The Joker, or Joker. And Jonathan Pierce in The Two Popes, which I don't know anything about. I mean, I've seen some trailers for it, but I haven't actually seen it. Again,
another Pope movie.
Another Pope movie.
Yeah.
Or series, yeah.
I was telling these guys on Netflix, there's a mini-series, whatever you want to call it, documentary, called The Keepers, about a scandal in Baltimore involving priests.
Right.
I mean, you know what? Very depressing, very disturbing, but again, another true story. So if you're following that line of whatever you want to call it, disgust
and outrage for the
it's something to watch. And again, another
how they've hidden things,
and another example of the Catholic Church hiding just horrific things, how young lives were destroyed and it was overlooked, but just horrible stuff. And by the way, Adam Sandler was not nominated for The Gem, or what's the name of that movie? Howard saw it, loved it, and apparently he's just amazing in that movie.
Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems.
That's right, yeah. Was that movie eligible?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Because I was reading yesterday, he was sort of snubbed, so anyway.
Well, because everybody thinks they attach the movies that he's done to, you know, because they haven't been, you know, nominatable necessarily, all the movies he's done. Okay, so leading actress was, I don't know how to say her name, Cynthia Enviro? I maybe have this
one movie.
Harriet. Harriet. I don't know anything about the movie. Scarlett Johansson in The Marriage Story.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Cerise Ronan in Little Women. Charlize Theron in Bombshell.
Mm-hmm.
That's a movie I'd like to see. I haven't seen yet.
Mm-hmm.
And Renee Zellweger in Judy. So, lesser known.
Yeah, I haven't seen many of them.
Yeah.
But that's a basic rundown. All the other categories, it's like... You know, they... A lot of them aren't given on Oscar night, so who cares other than friends and family?
Sort of like best film editing.
No,
like,
I know.
Best kind
but
of
I mean, the night of the Oscars, there's other awards too, but why do people tune in?
Yeah.
They
want to see the big stuff and the stars.
Yeah.
And the red carpet.
And I guess director too is a notable category as well. Anyway, thank you, Dan Duran, for that roundup.
All right.
You know, just, and before we go, we got about 5 minutes here, and I know I wanted to touch on this too. You were talking about watching movies and the experience of watching movies.
Yes.
You're an amazing sound guy as well. I'm really pumping you up today, aren't I?
I'm feeling good about myself.
No, I mean, you're
take this show.
You're an amazing. That's right. Dan is a guy. I don't know what's the word? An audiophile? Is that the word?
Yeah. Okay. I would be in the audiophile. Yeah, here's my history is when I first got into radio, I was on the air as an announcer and then sort of worked into the production department when I was in Moose Jaw. And then from then on in, my career had a lot to do with the back end of producing commercials, getting announcers in. I was in charge of departments with the writers and all of that kind of thing. So I became a recording studio engineer, basically, over time.
Right.
So I've worked in many radio stations in that capacity.
Right.
And spending a lot of time, you know, fine-tuning voices and, you know, dealing with all the recording studio elements and listening to different speaker styles and all of that. To become, you know, in the long run, an audiophile by the mere fact that I spent so much time doing it.
Well, here's the point. We're neighbors up north.
Mm-hmm.
You have a sound system that'll blow your brains out. Like, it's unbelievable. In fact, it's, you know, admittedly, been a bone of contention.
Admittedly.
No, I know. Like, because we have the you have your fireplace and then nice, big, quality speakers between the fireplace and the lake.
Right.
And listen,
forming the perfect triangle when you're sitting at the fire, you get the stereo. Yeah.
No, and I fully get it because I've sat there and I've experienced it. It's just, you know, it gets to the point where at some point it should be turned down or shut off, and often it's not.
Right. Because you go to bed a little earlier than
And I say to Billy sometimes, I'm such a hypocrite because while I'm up, I'm really enjoying it. And when it's time to go to bed, but, you know, I'm just putting myself in the position of the average person.
The other person.
At 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, it's probably time to. Anyway, you hear things that I don't hear out of speakers. Why are speakers so important? And when you stand, if I hook a pair of speakers up, you'll stand in the middle of the speakers and you hear something that I don't hear.
Yeah.
What is it? Like, what
well,
is
like,
that?
It's like anything. It's like it's a skill in a way, but you've trained your ears to understand things. Like, here's the thing. Like, if you don't know anything about a subject and you get in there, you know, top line, you don't know, you know, a great performance in a classical piano piece or something like that. But if you work at it for a while, you understand where the ebbs and flows of the musical piece should be and how it's written and, you know, when somebody makes a mistake or what. So the same thing in a lot of different disciplines. And in sound, and people have come to me a lot and asked about, you know, what kind of sound equipment should I, you know, should I? And I've always said,
including me,
if you can't hear the difference, then don't spend the money, because it's not, you know, you're not going to spend enough time in over time, perhaps, if you do a lot of listening.
Right.
But it's not, if it doesn't make a difference to you, then why spend, you know, an extra $1,000 on a speaker? My speakers, each one of them cost me $2,000 a piece.
The ones at the trailer?
No, in my house.
Oh, okay. Oh, I've seen. Yeah, you've had those for years.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah.
And they're called electrostatic speakers, and in the day, they're like awesome speakers. Well, they still are. Right? They're fantastic for me. And what I was looking for is a transparency of sound, and where when you stand up or sit down, the sound doesn't change a whole lot. You're not, and the various speakers aren't canceling each other. And, you know, but that's something that I know about and can hear. But not a lot of people, you know, can. So it's like, if you can hear the bass, if you like really a lot of bass, and you're not getting it out of your speakers, then, you know, spend the extra money to get the bass.
I get that. And Howard says that about golf balls and golf clubs, too. If you're not, don't go out and spend $600 on a driver if you're not going to take full advantage of it.
Yeah, why?
Or know how to use it, right?
Right.
Or, like, there's guys going by expensive golf balls when they never hit one properly.
Yeah.
You know? So I get that. But it's interesting because even Quickly, you've gone up to my speakers and looked behind and actually reversed the wires on them.
Yeah, because that's something I can hear pretty. If the polarity is reversed, right in the sweet spot, it sounds really weird. And I can say that's a pet peeve of mine.
No, I know, and I complain about your music a lot, Dan. But I'll tell you, I'm also enjoy
those moments.
I do.
Yeah.
When especially when Scotch. That night you played 10cc and told me to listen. I'm not in love.
Yeah.
No, and he tells you to listen to certain things, and it's like, wow.
There's a documentary on the making of that song.
That was just a song,
go to
right?
YouTube.
But with Dan Duran, it's an experience. Well, we're still waiting for Emily O'Brien to show up to tell her fascinating story. I hope she does show up.
Yeah.
Humble and Fred without Humble, Canada's comedy superstation, Funny 820. Humble and Fred show. Howard is not here today. He's having a medical procedure. Imagine that. Howard. Howard had a medical procedure. This one is another back burning.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Very excited about it.
Yes, isn't he?
Well, he gets all giddy when he gets into the medical world and, you know.
Yeah. Sitting in for Howard today is Dan Duran.
Doing the weather, normally it's 7:15, but I've expanded my role for the day.
Yes, you have.
I'm in studio, and here I am.
No, and it's
hanging out.
It's a pleasure having you because, well, I'm comfortable with you because
you're not so comfortable with other people.
It's true. I've known you for 30 years, and you're my buddy. And,
uh-huh. We got a lot in common.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you know what I like about you? When Gallagher came in, I had to pay for his cab fare. It's true.
Really?
Yeah, I don't have to.
No, you don't.
Maybe a little gas money. Who knows?
I'm not asking for that, but I did get dinner last night. Howard bought me dinner.
Ooh. Oh, fantastic. Well, yeah. Humble and Fred bought you dinner.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. So yeah. I really appreciate
because
that.
Because you're guesting
that
on the
$10 dinner was awesome, I got to say.
Well, you know.
Get paid dinner for breakfast.
Our guest is in studio. Before we get to our guest, let's clean up some of these commercials there, Phil.
Absolutely.
Sponsors of the show.
Sponsors of the show. What do you got there?
I've got CDN Technologies.
Right.
And of course, everyone knows that I do a podcast with Barb. Actually, Barb does a podcast with me called No Tech Talk, KNOW. And CDN Technologies is your firm when it comes to IT security, when it comes to data. You know, how to avoid being a victim of a devastating ransomware attack, bank fraud, negative PR, or a data breach. CDN Technologies is there for you. They're your outsourced computer company providing IT service, IT support, IT security to businesses in the Oakville, Mississauga, and GTA area. And don't forget, if you run a business and you happen to have data and you happen to collect personal information from your customers, you're legally liable to be secure. So check it out. Call 905-542-9759, cdntechnologies.com.
So you say data.
Data.
It's the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, Canada's number one plan for employee benefits. The Chamber Plan is Canada's leading group benefit plan with for small companies. If you want to go to chamberplan.ca, you can get a free quote for your small business. Very simple to sign up. It's stable because, 30,000 Canadian businesses now part of this. And it's the smart thing to do for your employees. So many products under the umbrella, health and dental and the Teladoc system. It's just fantastic. Chamberplan.ca. Well, as promised, we have I think this will be a fascinating guest. Emily O'Brien, back in 2015, was caught with drugs, cocaine?
Yes.
Strapped to your body.
Yes.
At Pearson Airport.
Yes.
And that started an adventure that that really isn't over, because you went through that, and then you've really turned your life around. So welcome, Emily O'Brien, a failed drug mule, right?
Hey. Represent.
Is that all right to say?
That's the best thing, yeah.
Uh-huh. So take us back. It's July 2015.
Yeah.
You're at Pearson Airport.
Yeah.
And you go up to the security, and your world changes. But prior to that, what got you there? What got you to Pearson that night?
Is this the first time you did this?
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
With drugs strapped to your body?
Yes.
How did it start?
Well, it actually started in it was late 2014, and I was running a social media company in Toronto, and in the midst of all this, like, my personal life was just in turmoil. Mm-hmm. And prior to 2015, I'd recreationally engaged in, like, drinking and casual substance use, and this all seemed normal to me in my line of work. At least that's how I justified it. And
part of the social end.
Yeah. And I also didn't like sleeping. I thought, you know what, I need this stuff to get me going, keep me awake, get those deals done. And
you can sleep when you're dead.
Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. I don't think I ever said that, but okay. It's too cliche.
All right. Too cliche. Okay, I'm old. Go ahead.
Go to the cliches.
Yeah.
And then, so when my personal life started taking, like, a downturn, and this is just a typical thing that a lot of people go through when their parents, you know, part ways, but this was, like, really challenging for me, because this was kind of everything I'd known growing up, and I...
How old were you when your parents separated?
I was 26, but, like, I say this all the time, and it's, like, it doesn't matter how old you are, like, when you see people that you love in pain and trying to keep things together because they don't want to hurt you... But they also aren't happy in their current situation. It's really hard to watch. And that was just it. We all loved each other so much, but we knew that what the current situation was just wasn't working. But that doesn't mean you could change things without also causing more pain. So anyway, I started to turn to what I knew the most, and that was alcohol and cocaine. And I went from substance use to substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I... Again, didn't want to, like, really ask for help because, you know, I was a female business owner. I didn't want to seem weak, and I had this confidence in myself that I would just get through it.
So was this a significant business, like a money-making venture that you had to protect, more or less?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. It was actually really fun because I didn't have to, like, get up at 9 a.m. to do it.
Uh-huh. So along the way, you meet someone.
Yeah.
And who was that?
I'm not going to say his name because, like,
okay.
Yeah. But I met him through my work, and he had asked to hire our business to kind of manage his social media account, do some content creation, all that stuff. So we're like, okay, sure. And I go up there to North York, where this establishment is, and it's actually a really, really nice, really cool guy. We hit it off, like, not romantically, but just, like, we just get along, and I end up, like, hanging out there, like, a couple days a week, and just chilling, and he also knew that there was something going on in my family, and so he knew all the right questions to ask. He went above and beyond to, like, do regular nice things for me, so, like, helping me walk my dog, he helped me move. I didn't see anything out of the norm.
Do you think the moment he met you, he targeted you to do this, or do you think...
He met you and then
decided you'd be a mark.
Yeah, because he could tell by my personality. And then as the more he got to know me, the more he knew that I had extensive travel experience, that I was kind of like a free-spirited 26-year-old with, you know, I wasn't married, and I traveled with, like, male partners before. This wasn't unusual to me. And he also knew that I like to drink and do drugs, and he took this weakness as something to use to help further his own personal schedule.
Had he coerced somebody else in the past to do this kind of thing, or are you his first?
Honestly, I'll never know the real truth. Like, he would tell me certain things that he had, but then I'm not going to, like, falsely accuse someone of something. So it's just, I'll never really know, because a lot of what he told me was fabricated.
Okay, so one day he says to you, here's a good idea. And what did he say?
Well, first of all, he wouldn't tell me what it was over the phone.
Right.
He was like, oh, I got to talk to you in person. I'm like, what is this about? Like, this is so weird.
Yeah.
And I knew that he was supposedly going through a separation. So I wasn't sure. Maybe this had something to do with that separation. And
was he a lot older than you?
No, he's 38.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so I was like, okay, like, just...
Well, you were 26. That's a lot older than you.
I don't know.
Okay. 12 years, I think that... Well, it's significant. It's of note.
Yeah, my parents ahead. My parents might say that, but...
Yeah, well...
I also dated someone that was 45, older. And my mom was, like, not impressed. Mm-hmm.
It happens.
I know a guy who once had a girlfriend 25 years younger.
A certain guy.
Yeah.
A certain guy.
You know, and if they're nice and they treat me well and...
Yeah.
You know,
no, I get it. That's all that matters.
They don't buy you just pizza. They actually take you out and do stuff.
Surf and turf. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you can get surf and turf at the racetracks now for $14.99.
Oh.
But anyway, that's something else. So anyway, he calls you up and?
And then he comes over and it's the middle of the afternoon and he's like, listen, I know you're going through a lot. I want to take you on this trip. And I was like, okay, like where? Like, where do you want to go? And he's like, oh, I want to go to Puerto Rico. I was like, okay, cool. And he's like, okay, well, but there's just something like I gotta let you know, like I gotta do some work when I'm down there. He's like, I gotta bring some drugs back and but don't worry. Like you won't have to do anything, like just come as my girl, you know, like you deserve this trip.
Mm-hmm.
Blah, blah blah. And I was like, okay, no, absolutely not. Like, get out of here, like scram. And so he left and he's like super embarrassed that he'd even asked me and I was horrified.
Did you know he was involved with dealing drugs or...
He didn't even do drugs.
He didn't even drink. So it was money, right? Okay.
Yeah. Like I'd never, up until like the trip, I never saw him take a drink once in his life.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So then he mentions drugs. So obviously you're surprised by that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're out.
Yeah.
And yeah. Can I tell him to like leave? And so he leaves. And this is like, he also brought me like a bottle of like dessert wine over to my apartment at 2 p.m. I was like, okay, at least bring me vodka. If you're asking this, like, dessert wine, what is this?
Yeah, I know, that gives you a headache.
Nasty.
Yeah.
Very sweet.
So then what happened?
So then I go out that night and I get this text and he knows that I'm out. He knows that I'm having a couple of drinks and he's like, you know what? I was so embarrassed about what I said earlier. Like, forget I ever said anything about this trip and about the drugs. And he's like, let's just go on a trip and... screw it, like just me and you, don't worry about anything, let's just go. He's like, I'll get the tickets and we'll go. And you know, a couple drinks helped me forget what he'd asked me a couple hours earlier. I didn't think this was, you know, suspicious at all. And I was like, oh, okay. He's like, okay, like as soon as you get home, send me your passport information. And so I get home at 2:30 in the morning feeling great from you know, the substances I indulged in. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay, click, snap, here you go.
I'm going on a trip.
Going on a trip.
I forget that he said we might be smuggling drugs.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
I'm just going to believe him. I'm just going to trust him, you know?
So now you're in Puerto Rico.
No. St. Lucia, wasn't it?
Yeah, this is the thing. So he told me we were going to Puerto Rico until we get to the airport. Mm-hmm. And then we get to the airport, and he's like, oh, we're going to St. Lucia. And I was like, what is this place called St. Lucia? And he's like, oh, it was definitely just your drinking. Like, I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not to be obnoxious, but like... the reason that I did cocaine was so I could be alert and like remember things, because I didn't like being like that drunk girl that was falling all over all the time. So it was like my reason for being alert, like, you know. So I was
so
like,
you still had a memory and you didn't remember that it was St. Lucia instead of Puerto Rico.
No, he lied to you, right? He said Puerto Rico, and then when you got to the airport, it was St. Lucia.
Mm-hmm.
It's
step by step, obviously.
He wanted
right.
your passport and everything so he could fill all that stuff in
mm-hmm.
without you knowing exactly where you were going.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. So anyway, so you're at the airport and you decide, and then you're in St. Lucia. What happens? Mm-hmm.
So the first 3 days are fine. We're at an all-inclusive resort and wristbands and all, you know. And the third day, like the first couple days are fine. He's like, oh, do you want drugs? And I was like, okay, like, sure. It's like, and then... he actually did some when we were down there. I didn't think he would, but he did. And then the third day in, like, I didn't really drink.
He did cocaine?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't very good down there, so I don't know really what it was, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyway, so the third day in, it's like 2 p.m., and I'm about to go down to the pool, because I didn't like going to the pool in the middle of the day, because it's scorching hot, and I would get burned in like 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to wait a little bit. I hadn't had really any drinks yet. And then he's like, okay, our friends are coming to pick us up in half an hour, and you're coming in the car with me. And I was like, well, what are you talking about? And he's like, we're here to work. Did you really think this is just all fun and games?
Even though he had said, forget about what I said, let's go down and just have a you, me vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And you're there, and then he does that.
Mm-hmm.
Things got dark pretty quick there.
Yeah.
And then you feel sort of vulnerable at that point.
Mm-hmm. And I still trust him, but he's like, I've
even
already...
at that point, you trust him.
I trust him that I'm not going to get hurt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I trust him that he's not going to hurt me. And he didn't. Mm-hmm. He never, like, laid a hand on me.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So then you go to see these friends, so to speak. He called them friends?
Yeah.
Okay. So you go there, and what happens?
They pick us up in this car, and I, like, look out the windows, but I'm like, oh, it's not like I'm going to go running and telling the police, right? Because I'm, like, in a foreign country. I don't really know who's in on it and who's not. And I don't really know what's actually happening. Yeah. So what I'm going to do, be like some crazy lady just screaming out of this random car in a country, like, I'm not going to do that. So I just go with him and thinking, like, I'm not going to actually have to do anything. Maybe I'm just going along for the ride. I don't know. Get to this house and looks like a normal house until you get inside. And then there's just like stacks of bricks on the walls. And I'm like, oh boy.
Of cocaine.
Yeah.
And at any point up till then, did he threaten you like you're in this now?
He's like, they have your passport information, and I told him that you're doing it with me.
So now you're thinking, if I say no or try and back out, I could get hurt.
Yeah.
Or never be seen.
Yeah. And I didn't know the drug trade. Like, I didn't know how serious these threats were, but I wasn't about to take chances.
No, I don't. Obviously, I can understand in that situation.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in it to that extent.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to drugs and trafficking, I mean, these people, they don't play games.
Yeah, and there's also another part to me that was like, okay, I want to just, like, do what he wants me to do to, like, be that good girlfriend or whatever I was that day. Mm-hmm.
So at this house, you see all the drugs, and then they show you how you're going to transport it?
First, they take my measurements. Uh-huh. Like, I'm at the tailor's, and they, you know, this woman has this measuring tape. And then she's like, okay, thanks. And then I have to go to the mall with this lady and these other people, and she's like, okay, we're gonna go dress shopping together, and I'm gonna pick out the dress that you're gonna wear, but you're gonna pretend to like pick out some other ones, and then we're gonna buy like the dress. So it's like a long flowy dress that's supposed to conceal the drugs that I'm gonna bring back.
Mm-hmm.
And then so we go pick up
did you like the dress?
Oh my, no. So ugly. Mortified.
It's not something you would
almost
have
as mortifying as my bowl cut I had when I was young.
So
form fit.
So you go and get this dress, and then the idea is it's a dress that obviously is going to conceal the drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is the drugs going to be in the dress, or is the drugs on you and the dress covers that? Like, do they strap it to you? I've got this set.
Just
know,
wait for this, like, custom couture outfit I'm going to talk about.
Okay, sorry.
So then, next step.
So the lady then tells me that I'm going to be wearing, like, spandex. The custom spandex underwear with, like, a little kangaroo pouch.
Right.
In the front and one in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so on the final day, she's already, and that's what the measurements was for, to, like, figure out what size to make these customized underwear.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just buy them at the drugstore or, like, the clothing store. You can't buy these, like, pouches with, like, Spanx with pouches in them.
But you're not very big, so how much cocaine could someone like you stuff in their underwear?
Two kilograms.
Well, how big would that be?
Well, there's one on, like, my stomach and then one on my booty.
And what would that have been worth on you alone?
Before we left, I don't know, like 5 or 6 thousand maybe. But then once it hits the streets, then it has a higher value. Yeah. 150.
Really?
Thousand?
Yeah.
Wow.
So at this point, do you ever think, you know what, I'm going to go and phone my parents or my dad or something and just let them, like, ask them what I should do about this?
So this is the thing. when we got back to the hotel, he didn't want me on my computer, like, at all. He's very, like, protective and, like, watchful.
At this point, do you realize this guy's a slime ball?
Yeah.
At that point, okay.
Yeah, and I was mad, but I was also disappointed in myself because I knew that I had played a role in this. Mm-hmm. But I still thought maybe at the end of the trip I wouldn't have to do it. And then he knew that I was really panicking about this because I was like, listen, I'm not good at this. Like, I've never done this before in my life. Like, I'm absolutely terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay. Like, how about when we get to Pearson? Like, you take the drugs off you in the bathroom, put them in your backpack, and give me the backpack, mm-hmm. and I'll take the backpack through, like, the questioning. And then,
really?
Obviously,
that didn't happen.
That did not happen at all.
So tell me, that before we get to Pearson, so you have the drugs on your body, you get in the airplane. What is it like during the flight And especially when they say we're now descending or whatever they say to Pearson. What's going through your mind? That must be, was it terror?
It was
like, I can't imagine.
A lot of uncertainty.
Well, that's that anticipation of knowing the plane is landing. I'm going to be in an area that I really can't get out of.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for me to get out onto the street, I'm going to have to go through security. Mm-hmm. And if I'm caught, my life is upside down. Like, what?
But that's
what
the
was
thing.
That like?
Like, I didn't think my life was going to be upside down. I had no idea the seriousness of the circumstances.
What?
Yeah, no. Like, I was completely ignorant to it.
So you're on a plane with cocaine strapped to your body and you don't think it's that serious?
Well, he had told me that, like, I was with him, right? So, like, okay. I was doing this with him. So if anything right. happened, it would be on him.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, one of his calming tactics, I guess.
So the plane lands?
Yeah, plane lands, and I'm just, like, ready to get this stuff off me. And then we're walking, and my eyes are just darting all over the place. I'm, like, the sketchiest person ever. Like,
you were doing all the things that security and customs is trained to look for.
Exactly, and I couldn't even help it. Like, my body was just reacting that way.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, like, no amount of, like, no charade could, like, help me from looking less obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So you're on the plane. Now, at what level were you, like, when did the things get, like, the stress levels go crazy? Because I think Fred and I, our stress mm-hmm. levels would have gone before, you know, way, way before this. Well, but once you're on the plane, you're, like, was it getting on the plane or was it descending or is it getting off the plane, getting closer to customs? Where did you, like, peek out at looking obviously like there's something really wrong with you, I guess would be the what ended up happening, and that's why they found you, right? Because you just look too obviously something's wrong with you. You're too
yeah.
nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when did you get that way?
I got it mostly, like, the first time when we left, like, because we had to go through airport security in St. Lucia, and I was like, oh, my God. That's when I was, like, really scared, because he's like, don't worry. He's like, they all know or whatever. I don't know if it was true or not.
Mm.
Like, but those
were
just things.
The point is, they probably don't care.
Yeah.
It's leaving the country, you know, what it's like down there. They don't care what's going.
So everyone, like, in St. Lucia watches you go through, and I'm, like, shuffling. Like, I'm like, oh, my God, how do I even walk with this thing on? I get through, so I'm like, okay, that's fine. And then we got on the plane. The plane ride is, like, long and short. It's feels like it went by really quick, but then there were parts of it that were just so long because I was in my head the whole time
mm-hmm.
trying to be normal, trying to, like, talk to the person beside me.
don't be anxious, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we land. I'm like, okay, like, I'm gonna, like, do my best, right? Because at the end of the day, these weren't my drugs. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't my drugs, and I wasn't about to sabotage an operation like that. That's, like, the more dangerous thing anyone could do. And I just, like, honestly wanted to go home, and I knew that if I just did it, no matter what the consequences were, which turns out weren't scrubbing graffiti off a wall, mm-hmm. but, wouldn't be as severe as anything otherwise.
So when you got to the airport, obviously, you wanted to take it off and put it in that. Where was he?
He was, like...
How come it didn't end up in the knapsack and him take it correct?
Because he said it's too late now. Yeah.
Oh, really? Conveniently.
In those exact words. Now, he looked back and he's like, it's too late now.
Isn't that nice? And let me ask this question. Did he have any drugs on him?
Yeah.
Oh, he did too?
Yeah.
So did he get caught that day as well?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it is. So what happens? So you walk up to customs, and what do they say? At what point does it all fall apart?
So you go through two sets of, like, checks, I guess. And the first one, like, I guess I was supposed to walk up to the, like, desk with him, and I didn't because I was mad.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's, like, another warning sign. It's like if you go on a trip with someone, then you don't, like, go up to the thing with them. And then he just, like, did all the declaration stuff. I did mine. And then we immediately, like, go through past the baggage claim.
Yes.
And then you can, like, see the exit.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell he's getting excited. And I'm just, like, shuffling behind him. And then there's, like, one last checkpoint.
Right.
And you have this piece of paper with you.
You hand in your card.
And it's got a number on it.
Right.
And you're like, what does this number mean?
Right.
And you don't know until you pass that checkpoint or not. In my case, they're like, you got to go here.
And
I was like, this is it.
All the cards, yeah.
Yeah.
Whether you're guilty or not, you've got red pen on your card.
Mm-hmm.
Right. No, I get it.
It's scary.
I get it. And then they say, come with us.
Well, they just said you have to go through, like, secondary.
Okay.
And then he was, like, freaking out at this point. He was like, I was, like, kind of like, well, makes sense, you know what I mean? But I still didn't know how serious things were about to get. And I'm like, okay, fine, like, let's do this. And he's like, pull your dress down. Like, I was like, how can I even pull my dress down? It's like a muumuu. It's like to the floor already. Like, what? And now you want me to start adjusting my wardrobe in front of a secondary screening?
Yeah, they're not looking for muumuus. I mean, really. Come on.
Ponchos, maybe.
Not only that, you said you had some of it strapped to your butt. What was the plane like ride? Or the plane ride like?
It was fine. It was just like squishy. Like, yeah. Imagine this like under your shirt.
Oh, okay.
And then, like on your back. Well, that would be a lot more than 2 kilograms. But, yeah.
Wow. So then they pull you over.
Yep.
To the next process, and what happened there?
And I kind of knew that that was it, and mm-hmm. I knew that at this point, like, I wasn't about to lie to a border security officer, so everything they asked me, I'd told the truth, and then they're like, okay, so you don't have drugs in your suitcase? I'm like, no, because I honestly didn't, and then they're like, okay, so, Miss O'Brien, like, we gotta ask, like, do you have drugs on you right now? And I took 10 seconds to answer, and so, because they had to ask me twice, because I just, like, went white as a ghost, mm-hmm. like, sweating, and stared at the floor, and I looked at him straight in the eye, and I said yes. And I was like, okay, and I felt actually a sense of relief.
Did you really?
Yep.
And then what, at that point, do they take the drugs off you, obviously, or what, do they get you to go with a female guard, and you have to take your dress off and
yeah.
give them the drugs, and wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, well, we got a break now. Okay. We'll continue this story.
Okay.
After the break, our guest is Emily O'Brien, who, as you've heard, brought drugs through Pearson and got caught.
Thank
you, Humble
Lord.
And Fred. Yeah. It's the Humble and Fred Show without Humble. Funny 820, Canada's comedy superstation. 820. Humble and Fred Show. Howard's not here today. Dan Duran sitting in.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dan. Our guest is Emily O'Brien, who was a drug mule and got caught at Pearson Airport. If you're just joining us, it's been a fabulous story. You can listen to the podcast to get all the details. Just something else. We left off. Emily is at Pearson.
Wearing drugs in a spandex.
Wearing drugs in a spandex. You're caught. And did they immediately take you to prison or to jail? Or
I spend about like 5 or 6 hours in like the bellows of Pearson Airport just waiting to be processed by
right.
different authorities. And I got charged by the RCMP, and then the Peel Police pick me up, take me to the Peel Police Station overnight, and then I get transported to Milton.
And what? At what point does your family find out?
They call them over the weekend, and okay. they're like, "Your daughter's been arrested. My mom's at the cottage." Yeah, it's like very
not good.
Very embarrassing.
Okay, and the process between getting caught and you actually going to jail was 2 years,
2.5 years. Yeah.
So what happens? Your parents post bail. Why so long? And what are you doing during those 2 years?
So I'm placed on under very strict conditions. I have to be on house arrest. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't have an ankle bracelet, but I had to live with my mom. I could only go to and from work and to medical and legal meetings. And then I guess my lawyer wanted me to take this time to kind of prove that I wasn't the person that got arrested that day. And I also believe that in myself. I was like, hey, listen, this happened. But I began to reflect on the rest of my life prior to that. And I was like, okay, I know I'm capable of coming back from this. While apologizing to like the community and the people that I've hurt, but I think I can actually use it as a tool to make me stronger and sober, which I did. And yeah, so I got like reference letters. I did like alcohol and addictions programs. I built my business. So
it was good for you. And you yeah. just told us you've been clean and sober.
Yes.
For how long?
Almost 2 years.
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
And you've built a business called
Cons and Kernels. It's a popcorn company. Popcorn's so good, it's criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And I started that actually inside Grand Valley Prison.
And what's the point, and where do you plan on going with that?
The point is not just to have, like, a popcorn business. It's also to raise awareness on how important it is to hire people that have criminal records. Because we all talk about, like, being tough on crime, but we're actually not being tough on crime by punishing people. We actually need to get to the deeper issues of crime, which is mental health, addiction, and poverty. And I knew that I went into there because of an addiction. And I met so many other fascinating, lovely women in there that had just been through, like, even more traumatic situations than mine. Like, I went there and I almost felt guilty because I felt like my situation wasn't bad enough. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to, like, create a vehicle to, like, share people's stories while also having a place that people could maybe come work when they're, you know, coming out of prison or looking for some skills to, like, you know, grow and learn. And also to, like, spread awareness to other employers. Like, that's my message. It's not just my business, but it's, like, something that I think a lot of employers should be doing because it actually really hurts the community and it also hurts the economy, too, if you really think about it. Because 13% of Canadians have criminal records and we're not hiring them because of something, one thing that they did in the past. Like, where do you think that, what do you think?
They pay the debt to society. But I guess society feels that they've come out of prison, so you can't trust them because they've done something so wrong that put them there, right? So I guess that's that. How do you get over that fear of bringing somebody into the...
Well, right. That's quite a mountain to climb, actually, because it's true. I mean, you're running a business and it's important to you and the person you're about to hire has that criminal record. I mean, ideally, you want to go, you know what, I'm going to give you a second chance, but not a lot of people are willing to do that.
Is there statistics on that? I would imagine statistically, it's not what we perceive it to be, mm-hmm. right?
Or there's jobs that are just like, okay, we're just going to hire you for like a month, but we don't want you full-time. Like, there's a lot of temp work mm-hmm. and like minimum wage stuff, but I feel like there needs to be more opportunities for actual growth and career development.
Well, you know, as long as you're doing this, I mean, that's a step forward.
Mm-hmm. Proving it.
Exactly. And if other people do the same thing, who knows? You can turn that around and give opportunity to people mm-hmm. that are coming out of jail. Because, again, you know, on the surface, I look and I think, geez, man, how could you be so stupid?
I know.
But again, you know, I've never been addicted to drugs and mm-hmm. I've never been, I don't want to say brainwashed, but coerced the way you were. I mean, you have to live it to really appreciate it. And I imagine there's a lot of women and a lot of vulnerable people that have done the same thing you did. Mm-hmm. And maybe they do deserve a second chance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in fact, they do. Because they're not really hardened criminals. Mm-hmm. They got sucked in.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's a great story, Emily. Thanks for coming today.
Thanks.
And before you leave, we want to present you with a lasagna.
Oh. God, I always eat in my car, so this is going to be great. This is going to last me all week.
I don't think you can. Do you have a microwave in your car?
Or an oven, well, in the summertime, if it's hot enough, I can just leave the window open.
Just tilt that up so we can see Palma's kitchen there.
Yeah. Whoa. Look at those carbs.
That's great.
That's so nice.
Oh, no problem.
Thank you.
That's from Palma's kitchen. Various locations throughout the West End.
Thanks, Palma.
And if you enjoy that, you might want to drop into a Palma's kitchen one day and buy some more.
Well, that's just great.
Guests of the Humble and Fred Show receive one of these.
Yes, they do.
Ooh, what's on it?
It's a meat lasagna.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
The best. Okay.
So you would have chosen meat over vegetable?
100%.
All right.
All right, good.
Okay, thank you, Emily O'Brien. Thanks for dropping by, and that was a great story, and good luck going forward.
Thank you so much.
Phil, what do we got?
Absolutely, the Humble and Fred Show.
Sticker U.
Yes, is brought to you by Sticker U. And on January the 30th, that's a Thursday night, Sticker U is launching a sticker museum and permanent sticker art exhibition. That's a long word. At Sticker U, that's the store at 677 Queen West. And you know, this Sticker History Museum isn't just about stickers. It goes back to the very beginning of paper and adhesive. And it also includes the first ever postage stamp. It's from the Victorian era, and it's a very rare piece of paper. It has a picture of Queen Victoria on it, if memory serves me right. I'm one of those folks. I love those sorts of stuff. Also, there's also an original Velvet Underground album with a banana sticker on the cover that Andy Warhol designed.
Fantastic.
That sounds lovely. So, stickeru.com, order your stickers online or check out their store, 677 Queen West.
Hey, everybody. Tim Niblett is a portfolio manager and Raymond James is a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. The retirement Sherpa will check in tomorrow. You know, it's RSP season. It really is. February 28th or March 2nd, whatever it is the deadline, something to think about for your portfolio and how to take advantage of beating the tax man. We all like to do that. And, you know, often we think on the surface we know it all, but we don't. You need a guy like the retirement Sherpa, like Tim Niblett, to show you the way to take full advantage of every tax break, especially through your RSPs. Tim Niblett, the Retirement Sherpa, retirementsherpa.ca. Again, Howard's not here today. He's probably on his way back now after having a nerve in his back burnt to make him feel better.
Yeah, and listen to tomorrow's show to blow by blow, blow, step by, burn by burn.
That's the voice of Dan Duran, who's sitting in for Howard this morning. Dan got to stay here overnight again. You know, we should have asked Emily.
To stay overnight?
Well, if she wanted to stay last night, you know, because that's a feature that we offer.
Oh, right. Yeah, all guests of the Humble Fred Show.
Guests of the Humble Fred Show are offered accommodation the night before.
And a lasagna on the day of.
Yeah. Yeah. She wouldn't have thought that was too weird, eh? Hey, Emily, by the way.
You can easily stay overnight and have a lasagna the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I was somewhat proud of our prime minister yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Were you?
Yes. Because he made the correlation of killing the general in Iraq.
Yes.
The scandal.
Correct.
And the plane crash or the plane tragedy in Iran.
Coming from Trump, the origins of that decision.
That's right. So he more or less suggested in a mild way yesterday that if the escalation had not taken place through the assassination, the murder, whatever you want to call it, of the general,
right,
the plane tragedy probably would never have happened. And I think that took some balls, because when you're in the position of Canada, you know, you have to play the game, because we're not really in a huge position of power, obviously. And you honestly, you don't want to get on the wrong side of the orange thing, because no,
that's true.
Who knows?
Yeah, he'll react.
Who knows where that would lead? But really, I was proud of him. And I mean, he didn't make a super declaration or anything, but you could read between the lines what he was saying. And, you know, that's what I felt from day one. That's a direct result of what happened in Iraq.
Albeit an unintended consequence, no doubt, but a consequence of that action, yes.
Who knew that was going to happen?
Right.
But it did happen. And, I think that was great, obviously, because I agree with it. I think we made that point on the show yesterday.
Right.
That indirectly, by consequence, Trump is responsible for the death of all those Canadians.
Mm-hmm. And it's a shame that folks are on social media right now. I read a bunch of tweets yesterday involving this story where, you know, Americans are saying, well, how can you blame America, not just Trump, how can you blame America for Iran bombing one of their own aircraft? But the thing is, they're all being huffy-puffy with their chests. They're forgetting that 62 Canadians died yesterday, or at that time,
over the weekend. Remember, that's the way Trump works, and like Fox News. You know, they operate by omission. You don't mention things and it didn't happen, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that's the tact. And from what I gather, right up to this point, I don't think there's been any correspondence between Trump and Trudeau. Like Trump letting Trudeau know that, hey, that's too bad about all those Canadians.
They didn't tell us about the general. He didn't tell us about assassinating him.
No, I don't know would leaders of countries
some sort of public statement about, we're very sorry this happened, you know, our hearts and hearts and minds are with you and all that. That never came out. No. I wonder if that plane load of people heading to Canada was really a plane load of Americans heading to America, if this dynamic would... any of this would have changed. Because I remember hearing something that Trump said was just sort of dismissive. Well, it was a bad thing that happened and whatever. You know, well, it's not our it was almost like, well, that's not our problem.
Yeah, but see, that's convenience, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if it was Americans, what would the difference be in this whole dynamic? Would there be a war right now?
Well, yeah. And here's the thing. And we touched on this yesterday as well. What is Canada supposed to do? We're in no position. What can we do?
Really, right, imposing sanctions is on Iran.
We can't attack them. We don't have the army. I mean, we can do some economic sanctions, but we don't even have diplomatic ties with them anymore.
We're asking for their help to bring in some Canadian experts for that crash.
Right.
So what can you do?
That's another thing I liked what Trudeau said yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He said, everybody wants me to fly off the handle, but listen, we have to repatriate some of the bodies.
Yeah, bring home the
bodies. The remains.
Yeah.
He said there's a lot of stuff that has to happen between now and then that you can't get on the wrong side of these people. So I totally agree with that, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got to be realistic about our position in the world.
Oh, absolutely. And this whole mess in Iran, it surprised me that they admitted, I guess too many arrows are pointing to the fact that they had shot it down, but it surprised me that they admitted it. And there's the consequence in Iran that, you know, all the protests that are going on there now, not support, but it's a mess there to begin with as far as political, you know, the military is different than the, you know, the governing the Ayatollahs and all the rest of that. It's a very difficult situation there. Obviously, it's never black and white in that part of the world.
No, it isn't. And the news this morning made me laugh. Arrests have been made. I mean, this is what you're dealing with. Arrests have been made. No real details, but who have they arrested? Like, you know,
the launch supervisor for the...
Probably not even that. You know, they've grabbed somebody, probably off the street, and blamed them for it. But it's some, you know, it's to appease the world right now. Oh, we've made arrests and
taking action.
These people, of course, it's nobody at the top, of course.
You know,
there'll be these people that will suffer for, you know, a mistake that was made. Listen, when a mistake is made militarily, you have to go to the top, right?
Yeah.
It's there. That's who you blame.
The buck stops.
Well, of course it does. The buck stops at the top, but in this situation, it won't.
And this admission, by the way, is probably more to do with the Iranian people themselves as well, because on that plane, like 100 and something people were from Iran. Mm-hmm. So there are signs around streets in Tehran that say, we are all in pain and sympathize. So in other words, they're all sorry for this, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not, there's no black and white in this. There's no right or wrong in this case.
Now, I don't know from this end whether lawsuits can be... Can you file lawsuits? Like the Ukrainian airlines, like, I mean, it's not their fault.
No.
So then you go right to the government
of Iran. Would you? But they did say that they were going, there was taking care of some of the victims, whatever that means.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever that means. Because apparently, in civilized countries, in situations like that, the compensation is based on really speculation on what the people would have went through, how much pain and suffering and all that. And I heard this
lost earnings and things.
Well, no, and I heard this discussion last night, the time between the missile hitting the plane and people realizing they're going to die. Can you imagine that terror?
Yeah, that terror, yeah.
Like, all those things are taken into consideration, so. And,
So how much is that all worth, I guess, is the question.
How much is that, and where do you begin, and who do you believe, and on and on and on.
And how long will this take? Because, you know, there was a great example that people mentioned involving an Iranian plane being shot down by America. And it took, the U.S. took them through the courts, all of them. And so it took something like 6 years before anyone got a dollar of it. Like, anyone got compensation for it.
And again, you don't know who to believe, and now Canadians have been invited over to inspect the crash site and the black boxes. But have you seen video from over there?
It's like, all cleaned up, apparently, right?
It's just like people, there's been people, like, going through belongings and stuff.
Really?
Yeah, like you grabbing stuff off the side of the road in Toronto here.
Yeah.
So there was a dishwasher.
Really?
You'd think that would have been one of the... Well, if they cleaned up the area, they have an entirely different concept. They don't want people to really
spend any time
on it.
So what is the point? And what is the use?
Mm-hmm.
Further to the president, I will say this. There's extremes on both sides. You know, I'm not a big fan of the prime minister, but when... He does something I like. I'll acknowledge
unusual,
it.
Unusual for a lot of people, because you have acknowledged things that for a man you do not think should be there. You do make make some allowances for.
Now this story I disagree with. Donald Trump last night's at the football game, the big national championship, and there's a shot of Vince Vaughn, the actor, going over, saying hello, shaking his hand, and then sitting down somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's suffering today through social media, apparently it's like unbelievable. Like, he's being attacked
for shaking a hand.
For even shaking the hand of the president. You know, and we got a real, which I totally disagree with. If Vince Vaughn wants to shake the hand of the president, Like, what I don't know if I... You'd have to be in that position. Seriously, if Donald Trump was on the street and I had the opportunity to shake his hand, just to go up and look at him or be that close to whatever he is.
Right.
I might do it. I don't know. But you have to be in that position. But who knows? Maybe Vince Vaughn is somewhere in the middle. Maybe he leans to the right. Mm-hmm. Maybe he thinks what Donald Trump is doing, that's his prerogative. But isn't it funny in a country like the United States, freedom, freedom, freedom of speech, aren't we the most glorious nation on earth? That man's decision to shake the hand of the president has got him into like a social media quagmire this morning. It's just wrong.
I agree with you. And whatever Ellen's sitting in the box of wasn't something that Ellen was that with him or with
no with was it. Wasn't it George Bush? Yeah.
Yeah. Our society has become so polarized on these issues. I mean, so you're not supposed to associate with the other side anymore? That doesn't make any sense. How are we ever going to find peace in the world if we continue off with these ridiculous judgments?
It's like the teams that win championships. If you're going to the White House, if you decide not to go, super. That's your decision, and for whatever reason, you've decided not to go. But for those who decide they want to go, if I won the Stanley Cup with the St. Louis Blues and I don't like Donald Trump, I'm not necessarily not going to go. You go for the experience of the White House, and a president is acknowledging it.
The president of the United States, happens to be Donald Trump. In this ceremonial transaction, which is what it really is, right?
But we're so polarized now, and everything is so over the top. And again, and I don't know Vince Vaughn's political position. Like, I know John Voight loves Trump. So when I'm watching Ray Donovan, part of me's thinking, what a jerk.
Yeah.
This guy likes Trump, but he's very good on Ray Donovan. You know, probably the reason I watch the show. I'm not going to stop watching it because of John Voight's position on Donovan. You know what I mean? On and on and on and on. But I just thought that was very interesting. And this is just last night.
Mm-hmm.
And what Vince Vaughn
blown up so much.
Yeah, it's crazy. Another story that's blowing up is the Royals.
I've heard about the Royals.
That's right. Yesterday, the Queen gave permission for Harry and Meghan to break away from the family and do it on their own. And, I mean, there's so many aspects of this story that just fascinate me. Are you a royal fan, Dan?
I am not.
No.
Never have been.
Do you think it should be abolished?
I don't care that much about it. I mean, do we pay for the Queen?
Well, that's part of
not
this.
Even sure.
No, we don't. As a country, we do not.
Yeah, right. So, okay, I'm fine with that. Well, I don't really care. I mean, none of this. I mean, it's such an antique in our democracies that I don't know why it's. It's only a figurehead, and it's a fascination for pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, we'll keep that going. It's something that it's like a tourist attraction for Britain. So, I totally get why. That couple wants to be out of the family, and that makes sense to me. I don't think we should have to pay for the security. That's another aspect of this, but it's not the major one. I think that he's getting out is the
Well, we'll start thing. There.
Okay.
Apparently, if they move to Canada, and the plan is they would split their time between the UK and Canada.
Right.
While in Canada, it's almost our obligation to pay for security.
Why?
It's decorum.
Tradition.
Yeah.
Is that it?
So
decorum.
Whenever the Queen visits, we bring our plane. She takes care of us. She goes to the hotel. We pay for that. She's part of it.
Yeah, but these rules are different because those people don't move here. If they're moving here part-time, they should pay for that.
And they want to. That's the thing. They want to.
No, not necessarily the security.
Oh, no. But Harry and Meghan are like, we're trying our best to be as independent as possible here.
Okay. Yeah. So that, number one, it should not cost Canadians for their security if they live here.
Right.
Is my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, they're talking about financially how they survive. Like, apparently he's worth $40 million and she's worth $6 or $7 million. I think that's pretty good, don't you? For survival?
I could survive on
No,
that.
Like, it just blows my mind, you know, the different categories.
So he already has $40 million in the bank? I thought there was, like, it was all some
no, he's
trust.
Worth, well, he's worth about $40 million,
oh, okay.
million dollars, from what I read. But again, when you live a certain lifestyle, I guess you can plow through that pretty quick.
Right. So what, he gets $1 million a year or something like that from...
Don't know.
From,
his security is $2 million, if memory serves me right. $2 million U.S. a year. So you have to have a bodyguard at all times because he's sixth in line to the throne. So we might have to pay $1 million a year for him and then something else for Meghan.
Is he six?
Yeah, but I...
Yep.
Okay.
Sixth. Okay.
But my point is, they break away from the family. They're no longer on the... they're no longer feeding from the trough.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think it seems to me they would have enough money to make their way.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Here's a question. Do you think that in Canada, with the way Canadians are, also keeping in mind how the tabloids are in Britain, do you think that it's going to be like a huge deal, like wherever the prince moves? Or is it going to be more like, you know, sort of, okay, that's the prince. He lives down the road.
Well, that's a good question. I thought about that last night because I think maybe they chose Canada for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they were moved to Los Angeles or, you know, the paparazzi would be on them constantly.
Right. There's maybe, not a huge paparazzi contingent in Canada.
No.
It doesn't happen here.
And it wouldn't be nearly America. To the same degree.
Yeah.
Like they spent the holidays out in...
Vancouver Island.
Yeah, Vancouver Island, and apparently everything went swimmingly.
And they asked everybody not to post social media for, you know, if they encountered and did pictures or whatever, they asked them to just leave it, you know, alone for a couple of weeks, and everybody respected that.
Mm-hmm. But that's Canada.
That's Canada.
And I could see that's why they would be in a situation where if they're going to leave the UK, this is where they'd come. Thank you, Dan Duran, for being part of the Humble and Fred Show today.
It's been a joy.
It was a pleasure working with you, and you really added to the broadcast.
Oh, thank you.
Howard will be back tomorrow, and we'll catch up on his treatment.
His procedures.
Uh-huh. And we'll hear from you with the Dan Duran weather.
Dan Duran weather.
Humble and Fred Show, Funny 820. Wait a minute, Phil. Do I say Funny 820 before or after you do that? I forget.
I guess it's
or
me.
Does it matter?
Well, it's the end of the show, so this episode of Humble and Fred Radio is brought to you by FYI Music News, the Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, the Chambers Plan, Palma Pasta, CDN Technologies, and our newest sponsor, Sticker U, where you can get your stickers on Queen Street or order anywhere in the world. We broadcast to the planet from the worldwide headquarters of the Humble and Fred Show. More Humble and Fred tomorrow and online at humbleandfredradio.com.